This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
A time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Red, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
It's time for the Brian Roux Show on Revolution Radio, coming to you from beautiful Vancouver, Canada. Brian and his guests talk about the big picture, the world view of reality with good and evil. They explore the truth and lies from aliens to globalists to advanced ancient civilizations.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know. It's fun though, isn't it?
Welcome to the Brian Roux Show on Revolution Radio. This is Tuesday, September the 7th, 2021, coming to you from beautiful, sunny Vancouver, Canada. Two exciting new developments. The first is that I've gotten a kitten. First time I've gotten a cat since 1985, and she's doing well. She's about 12 weeks old. She's playing right now at my feet with this piece of plastic wrap, but she'll play for an hour with it. She cost me about 21 cents a day on food, so things are going well with the kitten. But second thing, and most importantly, I've been saying for months that I'm going to renew my Revolution Radio phone-in number so you can phone in. Skype didn't renew it a couple of years ago, and I couldn't figure out how to do it. But Willow, one of our station managers, gave me some good advice, and I just did it hours ago, so I've got a new phone and number. I'll give it to you right now, but I'm not sure if it works yet. But here it is, the number. It's based in New Hampshire, because I'm in Canada. It had to be an American number for Americans to call an American number, right? So the area code, of course, is 1. I mean, you dial 1 for long distance, and the area code is 603-635-4946. So I'll say that again so you can write it down. So this is my phone-in number. You can even test it right now. It's area code 603-635-4946. And I'll repeat it later in the show and every episode. So I invite people just to phone in any time, because I always generally play pre-recorded talks that I did in recent days. But it lacks that immediacy of being live and talking with the audience, and I love doing that. So if you phone in, I can record it and actually release it as video, so it's your chance to step onto the pages of history and achieve some fame on the Brian Roux Show on BitChute. So call me right now. Call me anytime, although I'm not sure it's activated since I just did a few hours ago. But by next Tuesday, it should be on. So plan on phoning in and talking to me. That's very good. So for today's really big shoe, I've just interviewed Kathleen Martin on Saturday. And she is the niece of Benny and Barney Hill, which is the most famous alien abduction case and the first one known in history from 1961. Their book was published in 1966. The famous Benny Barney Hill case. So Kathleen Martin's been at this for 60 years. She's 73 now. And she's worked on three comprehensive studies on nearly 5,000 experiencers, two of which she initiated and saw to the end, and has five professionally published books. Her bestseller with nuclear physicist Stanton Friedman is Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. And she and Stan worked together for nearly 14 years and collaborated on two additional books, Science Was Wrong and Fact, Fiction, and Flying Saucers. And her book with Denise Stoner was The Alien Abduction Files, includes her investigation of six intergenerational cases of abduction contact. Her fifth book, Extraterrestrial Contact, What Do You Do When You've Been Abducted, is a comprehensive guide to contact for experiencers, those who love them, professionals who work with experiencers, and the interested public. Additionally, she's a contributor to the Edgar Mitchell Free Foundation's book, Beyond UFOs, The Science of Consciousness and Contact with Non-Human Intelligence. I just bought this book, got it this week, 800 pages long. It's really got the evidence of a wide base, like 5,000 witnesses, experiencers. So Kathleen Martin's essays have been published in several additional books and magazines. Her books are available in all formats on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And autograph copies can be purchased on her website, which is Kathleen-Martin.com. That's Kathleen with a K, Kathleen-Martin.com. Also on Facebook, Kathleen.Martin. Yeah, so she's given on-camera commentary on TV shows like Discovery, History, National Geographic. So she's one of the famous ones. So it's a real honor to get her on my show. You can also see this actual video on my BitChute channel. The video is good because I'm dressed like John Travolta. I got a white jacket on. I got this wide lapel shirt with stripes on it. People are already leaving comments, looking pretty good for 61. So while you guys are listening to this, I get to admire myself by looking at myself. I also use these nice Zoom virtual backgrounds. So I'll play our first talk, which is called Kathleen Martin's Research and View on the Alien Agendas. That's 46 minutes. And then the second one is 36 and a half minutes, which is Kathleen Martin on how to deal with a mantid. This is good. We had, this was a Zoom with my meetup group, which you can join, called Positive Alien Agendas meetup group. And included Christina in the United States, and she's got an intense relationship with a mantid right now. So she was getting advice from Kathleen. So it's very potent kind of talk. So without any further ado, I will ask you to please do donate to Revolution Radio. We're totally listener supported. And now I will carry on with our first talk with Kathleen Martin. So I will now do my Skype share screen and sound, as it were. What could possibly go wrong? Okay, got that activated. And here's the talk. Welcome to the Positive Alien Agendas Meetup. Today, our guest is Kathleen Martin. It's a real honor to have her here. Her interest in UFOs and contact began in 1961 when her aunt and uncle, Benny and Barney Hill, had a close encounter and subsequent abduction in New Hampshire's White Mountains. And Kathleen can speak on all sorts of entities, benevolent, malevolent, and somewhere in between. She spent just in UFOs and contact began in 1961 case and continues to seek scientific analysis of the compelling evidence. And she's written all about these entities in her book called Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted. It's available at Amazon at the link below this video. And Kathleen's one of the leading ufologists of our time. Since 1990, she's researched the perplexing nature of UFOs and the non-human entities associated with highly advanced aerial vehicles, not through the work of others, but via her own groundbreaking research, investigation, and experimentation. Her research has extended to archival collections and the U.S. government's involvement in the investigation of UFOs and its major studies. So this is combined to give her a depth of knowledge that few possess. So it's a real honor to have you, Kathleen. Welcome to our group.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, I want to start off by asking you, you've dealt with like thousands of people and investigating their experiences with other entities, aliens. You want to start off with that? Tell us a bit about your research with them.
Okay. I've worked on three major research studies. The first one began in 2011, and this was a relatively small study. There were 50 experiencers in a 75-person control group. We were attempting to identify commonalities that experiencers share that are not common in the general population. And we were able to discover that those commonalities are that experiencers tend to develop psychic abilities, to become intuitive. Many can heal others. It seems to be positive qualities that experiencers develop. And then Ray Hernandez spoke with me in 2013, and he had had an experience in Miami. Do you know of Ray Hernandez? He's the person who started the Edgar Mitchell Foundation.
Yeah, actually, just hours ago, Amazon just delivered his book. Susie Hansen, she wrote to me and said you should get this book, so I just got it.
Okay, I have a chapter in that book, actually.
Oh, very good.
I'm part of that organization, part of Free. And Denise Stoner and I were telling Ray way back in 2013 about the commonality study that we had done after Ray and his wife had an experience at their home in Miami. He's a federal tax attorney, by the way. And he made the decision that he would like to form this organization Free and to do an experiencer study. And to he ended up with about 5,000 people who participated in that study. And so that provided a lot of information. And it was people who had experiences with non-human entities of a large variety, and people who had experiences using things like ayahuasca, people who had happy contact, and those who were abducted or who had contact with negative entities. And then since I had done the first study, I told Ray that I wanted to do another study through the Mutual UFO Network. And I was going to do that with some people who had PhDs. And Don Derry was one of them. He was a psychology professor at McGill University and had done a lot of studies with Bud Hopkins. So he was receptive and he took part in MUFON's study. It was a 3-year study and it was the same results that experiencers become more spiritual, more psychic, were empathic, and so on and so forth. So it was all positive.
So what percentage of experiencers want to like keep the relationship going with the aliens? They feel good about it rather than wanting to get rid of it.
In Free's study, it was, I believe, 83%. In MUFON's study, it was 71%. But among the abductee group, we divided it into groups of the experiencers overall, then those who had the characteristics of UFO abduction syndrome as identified by Dr. Don Derry's American Personality Inventory, and then the contactee group who were having positive contact. So among the abductee group, 75% wanted to continue to have contact.
Wow. So that indicates a good relationship. But actually, the title of this talk I put on the meetup was Kathleen Martin's Research and View on the Gray Alien Agenda. So do you want to talk a bit about the sense of what you view the future as, or where do they want to take us in the future? Or do you believe, is there an agenda?
Well, I think there are many agendas, and that there are many races of grays who are here, and they're working with different groups. So there are grays who just work alone. Those are the ones who have worked with my family. There are two sizes. There are the ones who are like sentient beings and who are nice. And I've had good experiences with them. My aunt and uncle had good experiences. Even when Dr. Simon said to my uncle Barney, "Do you feel like that you have been kidnapped?" Barney said, "No, I don't think of it as kidnapping, because when I think of kidnapping, then I think that someone has been harmed, and I haven't been harmed." Even though the media, everything spun that as being a horrifying and terrifying abduction, it wasn't. It was initially, because we didn't know that this had ever happened to anyone else before. So Betty and Barney didn't know what would happen. And when I was young, I was the same way. I had a great deal of difficulty and fear around all of this. But as time went on and I learned more, then I was able to integrate my experiences in a different way. And I was able to remember a great deal of my experience without hypnosis, but I had hypnosis as well. So there's that group of grays. Some of them about 5 feet tall, and then there are smaller ones who work with them, who are more the ones who, like the guards, who won't let you get off the craft with anything that belongs to them. They're the ones who come for you, take you to craft. There's always one standing at the where you enter the craft. So then we have the grays who are working with the mantis types.
Yeah.
And that's pretty prevalent with mantis types.
Do you feel the mantis are the top of like a hierarchical structure at all, like almost like a governmental apparatus where they're the progenitors or the project managers, and the grays follow them?
Yes. Well, they're working in many cases that I've had, the grays are working with the mantis types. The mantis types have been like the physicians, and the grays have been those who had a relationship with that experiencer throughout their lifetime. They comfort them. If something happens where they're feeling pain, they remove the pain. They're the educators and so on and so forth. Whereas the mantis types are more sort of in charge. Now, I worked on a case fairly recently. I have not investigated many cases for the Mutual UFO Network. I've done everything just privately. But this one ended up being reported to MUFON. So I had to send them information. I had set up with people who were referred to me to paranormal investigators who had a very good reputation. Stanton Friedman was impressed with their knowledge of physics in their presentation. You all know who Stanton was?
Yeah, you worked with him for many years. I interviewed him once about a year before he died. And at the end, he said, "Oh, let's do it again," you know. So I was really sad when he went. But he spoke highly of you. You worked so closely with him, right,
for a long time? We did for almost 14 years.
Yeah.
We wrote three books together. So these women were referred to me, and they wanted to do an experiment where they would meet with a confirmed experiencer to see if they could go to the house to do a CE5 experiment, maybe take photographs, maybe capture EVPs, that sort of thing. So I talked to Chris Bledsoe and told him what they wanted to do. They lived in North Carolina, so Chris said yes. And so I introduced them, and they went to his house. And that night there was a light next to the moon, and it was coming in closer and closer. They're standing there asking questions, receiving EVPs, when all of a sudden their equipment is no longer in their hands. They are reeling back and forth. They're feeling a little nauseated. They start looking around. The equipment is on the ground near a bush. They pick that up. They had left a camera running. This was a Bell and Howell infrared camera, and picked everything up, went into the house. And Chris's wife said, "Where have you been? I've been looking for you." And they said, "Oh, we've been out there." And she said, "No, no, you weren't. I was looking for you. Do you know what time it is?" 1 o'clock in the morning. So they were really surprised. And by the way, when they went home and they started looking things over, they discovered that these entities were captured on that Bell and Howell camera, that video camera.
Wow.
For a few seconds coming in. So the interesting thing is that there was this beam of light, kind of a purplish, bluish, you know, as experiencers, you're probably all familiar with that color light. And it was coming across sort of, you know, like you would see a laser beam. But there's an entity dropping off that beam of light, and she's not fully materialized. And then as she comes down closer to the ground, she becomes more solid. She materializes. And she has a wand. She looks like a fairy. She has a wand in one hand. She's wearing a dress. Then there was another one who was maybe a mantis. I'm not sure. But one of these women has had recurring relationships with mantis beings. And he was sitting on the ground, and then he just lifted up off the ground and was just floating across the screen. And he had a blue light in one hand, a white light in the other. And he's just moving them back and forth as he's kind of flying along slowly. And then there was another one. There was a huge flash of light that came from that craft. And another one was closer to the camera and on the ground. And he was standing there in a black uniform. He had headgear on, but you could see a chiseled nose and maybe an eye and maybe a mouth, but I'm not sure about that. It wasn't really clear. But they ended up, the three of them, I hypnotized two of them and I interviewed Chris Bledsoe. And they were with this mantis type being, one of the women was. The other two, Chris and the other one, were with human types. So they all had a good experience. There were no examinations on tables or anything like that. They were taken to a place that didn't appear to be on this planet because they didn't see any vegetation whatsoever. And there were... they thought maybe it was the moon. There were tall structures there, tall, narrow structures. There was a lot, you're shaking your head. Yes, you must be familiar with
it. Yeah, there's pictures or people have remote viewed buildings on the moon, right?
Yeah. And there was another structure that was not tall, and you could see through it. And there were like piping in different colors that were connecting it together. And so they were taken there, and to one of them, the one with the mantis relationship, was thrilled. She was meeting people that she knew, that she had remembered, and was just really happy. The other one who was with Chris and who was meeting with the human types learned about how they had lived here on Earth at one time, hundreds of thousands of years ago, that there had been an environmental collapse, and that they had the technology to move on that they had gone to, they had found a binary star system and had gone to a planet that was in twilight most of the time. And they come back here to this planet from time to time, and they're just checking up on us, assisting in our development. They're not taking anything from us. So that was another friendly group. And we know that most of the human types appear to be friendly, except for those that have been captured by the reptilians.
Yeah, some reptilians seem to be negative or bad, right?
Some seem good alien, bad alien. And some seem to be, people say that they're positive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have been speaking with a council and members of that council. It was part of an experiment that I started to take part in 2016 with a group of researchers. And this council taught us about consciousness, taught us how to connect with them, how to communicate with them telepathically. And so I've sort of continued with that as well. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of Kevin Briggs.
No, but is this like a higher realm council, like an alien council?
Yeah.
It's so how do you connect with them? Is it like astral traveling? How do you, is it a psychic thing? How do you?
Yeah, it's initially we connected with them through Kevin. We met Kevin. He had been advised to go to the MUFON symposium in 2016 in Orlando. And when he was there, he met two friends of mine that I work with. One was Denise Stoner, who was co-author of the Alien Abduction Files with me. And the other one is a psychotherapist who is a good friend of ours as well. And so the three of us decided that we would be willing to meet with Kevin. And we were interviewing him. He had contact with two human types who said that they were Arcturians, but not from Arcturus, but they were Arcturians. And he was 9 years old when he met them. He was a boy living in England, and they showed up in his bathroom when he was taking a bath and scared him, frightened him, but they stayed there. And then one of them stayed with him for an entire week, and he was seen then as an orb. But he came back to Kevin time and time again, and he thought he taught him how to astral travel. So Kevin was doing that. He had physical contact with all of them when he was 15 years old, and I did the hypnosis with him about that. And he grew up in England. He became a police officer. He got married to a researcher at one of the universities. She was a research assistant. And then they moved to the United States, and come to find out he lives in the same town that I live in. That was quite a coincidence.
Well, you're in Florida, right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm in Central Florida, 30 miles west of Orlando.
Yeah, I'm interested in your experience, like your sort of your inner experience, your inner connection with aliens or higher realms, or what is it? Want to just talk more about you and introduction of your background?
Yeah, so Kevin's entities, as we met with him over a period of a couple of years, once a month, we learned how to connect with these entities through meditation. So I can channel if I want to, but I don't feel comfortable with it. I have channeled only one time. And I don't know, maybe in the future, I will think about doing that at some point. But I know that I can. And we meet and we communicate telepathically. Generally, we do a group meditation, but I have can do that individually as well. And I communicate mostly with a scientist whose name is Zark, spelled J-A-R-K. He was the one who wanted to meet with me initially. And when he meets with me, I feel a very strong kind of electrical tingling sensation through my body. And then I can receive telepathic communication with him. And so I grew frightened for about 2 years because I was at a meeting where he wanted to channel through me. I had invited him to the meeting, but not to channel through me.
Is this a meeting done on Zoom or actually in person?
No, this was in a restaurant.
Really, with people, you mean?
With people, with friends that we were going to invite to join this investigative group with Kevin.
Oh, so he wanted to talk to them through you, you mean?
He wanted to talk to them through me. So he started pounding on my chest. And I was like, no, I was not going to let him in. And so I resisted him, but my friends saw me and they thought that I must have had an attachment. No, ETs don't attach. Those are negative interdimensionals that attach to people.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Zark and I had a kind of a falling out, but I have invited him back into my life just within the past couple of weeks. So I'm beginning to communicate with him again. And so once a week I do meditate with a group of individuals and we go to sort of astral traveling to places.
Is this on Zoom or in person? Do you get together or do you do it online?
This is, we don't do it on Zoom. We do it on telephone.
Oh, telephone.
Yes.
Because I've been talking to people about doing that with people outside of Vancouver. So we thought we would meet on Zoom or something and get a group together. So any advice on that? I'm interested in that. Yeah.
We have done it on Zoom, but what I found is that it was too distracting for me. And so I prefer just to sort of lie down or prop myself up in my bed.
Well, maybe seeing people is too distracting, you mean?
Yes.
I'm saying, what if you turned off your camera, it's all audio, and then you can lie down and listen.
Yeah, you can do that if you have a place to lie down and your computer's near you. I could probably do that. So that would work. So we do that, and we are working more and more toward being together in that location. We just had one last night, and it was all about healing the earth. And we didn't even plan that in advance, but we all found ourselves receiving very similar messages. So as we do this more and more, we're able to develop in this way.
You feel that's like the cutting edge of contact with aliens is people getting together in groups or individually with the, like Grant Cameron said, it's all about consciousness. You know, it's not about nuts and bolts.
Absolutely.
And landing on the White House lawn, that's not the route to go. So maybe you're going the best way for ET contact then.
Yes, they say that they're not going to have physical contact with us until we move ahead, until we all understand consciousness. I know that there is some physical contact going on in South America, though. Yeah. So, you know, maybe that group down there is farther ahead in their development than we are. I know I've only been learning about consciousness since 2016.
Oh. Well, I've been really influenced by Susie Hansen's work, and we have another experiencer here, Jeff.
Susie.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Yeah. So she's saying her interpretation of the Greys is, like you say, they're working behind the scenes and then they want to develop us. Do you want to comment on that? Or what do you think of her thesis that she calls it a universal governing body. Others call it a federation of planets, that there's some kind of governmental structure in place. Like you said, the aliens have many agendas, but they seem to be under the control of some body or federation. Yeah. They can't just do willy-nilly.
In the Council of Eight, we have two Greys, We have a mantis. We have a tall white and a blue avian. And let me think. I think that's, I said mantis. Yeah, that's about it. We have a ninth dimensional. Well, actually two ninth dimensionals who kind of work together, who have not been in physical form for a long time. But so yes, the Council of Eight says that they are part of the Galactic Federation and that they are in charge of this quadrant of the galaxy.
That makes sense. Because you can't just have one group of aliens going to land on the White House lawn for a prank. That wouldn't be allowed, right?
That's some control mechanism. And there are many smaller groups that all come under the umbrella of the Galactic Federation. That's my understanding of it.
Yeah, that's what I believe too. And that seems to be what we see. There seems to be some control on their part, like they want to be behind the scenes, but I guess they're in favor of gradual disclosure, don't you think?
Yes, and I've talked to the Greys telepathically on craft. And I've asked them many questions, like, why are they taking people intergenerationally? Why are they taking my family, for example? And it's just to upgrade the genetic line, and it makes it easier when you take a genetic line than if you just take a lot of different individuals. It's part of a scientific study, in a sense, to upgrade us. And that upgrade is really important, to upgrade our DNA so that we can move on to the fifth dimension. That's what they say.
Yeah.
Also, their concern is that humans, our technological growth is out of sync with our spiritual development. And so when that happens, they have seen other planets who destroyed themselves. And they know that we've destroyed ourselves in the past. And so they are working towards spiritual development, they say, this group that my family works with.
Okay, and yeah, like Susie
many
says.
Many other groups as well.
Yeah, they're trying to prevent or sort of on a retrograde path, and they're trying to intervene and upgrade that. Mitch, so we'll talk about your relationship, your aunt, for the audience. So Betty and Barney Hill is like the most famous first original case, like from 1961. So what do you think are you part of the same abduction of genetic lineage or contact with Betty's your aunt, right?
Yes, Betty was my aunt, my mother's sister. We didn't tell anybody. Betty and Barney's experience was revealed as the result of a violation of confidentiality. But the rest of the family, my mother and I, did not have our confidentiality violated. And so my mother went through her entire lifetime without going public.
Betty's sister was going through the same things as Betty, but the world didn't know about it. The world knew about Betty.
That's right.
And you too, then you're part of this as well.
And Betty's sister was my mother. And my mother and I were taken. And I had never intended to tell anyone, but psychic people just kept coming up to me at conferences and saying, you really need to tell people that you're an experiencer because it's going to help other people. And so I finally decided that I was old enough that I didn't really have to care about what anyone else thought about me. And so I just started telling people within the UFO community.
But when did you come out? When did you start saying that?
Well, the first time I ever said that is I was speaking at Contact in the Desert, and I was on the stage with Whitley Strieber and some other experiencers. And I was supposedly just the researcher from MUFON. And I thought, well, it's about time that identified myself as knowing more than I had been letting on. So I then admitted that.
I guess you're happy with that decision, right?
I am. I am happy with that decision. I'm the debunkers, the disinformants made my aunt's life miserable.
Oh, yeah, I guess at that time, in the 60s and 70s, it must have been hard. Like now it's not so bad because we have a whole community of us, like yes, a subculture.
Yeah. They've recently raised their head again with new information, allegedly that Travis Walton was never taken. And they're working to do that with my aunt and uncle too, but I'm ignoring them.
Yeah, so it's probably a disinfo
totally
program.
Ignoring them. I'm not giving them any attention whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah, there's always going to be that element, I guess. But yeah. Have you been abducted like since birth, like all through your life? Or did you have a pre-birth or arrangement before you were born, do you think?
I think I probably did. But my conscious memory of it began when I was 17, when my Aunt Betty was doing an experiment to have, this was with a group of scientists, and she was trying to get craft to land on my grandparents' farm. I grew up across the street from my grandparents, and one night a craft did come in. It was observed by two people. It landed within 200 feet of my childhood home, and my mother and I remembered
that's cool.
Holy ourselves smoke. On that craft.
Wow, that is so amazing.
Yeah. And then, so, you know, I wouldn't doubt that I was taken for the first time when I was maybe 3 years old. About 37% of the experiencers in our study have been, and almost everyone has been taken before age 20. But I just don't remember being taken before age 17 when Denise has attempted to hypnotize me to go back to younger years. I'm too frightened. So I've told her recently that I want her to tell me that I'm going to know what I know now. I'll have that in mind, but I'll be able to look at myself at an earlier age. So maybe.
So we'll you be must be a hybrid then, right?
I never say that I'm a hybrid. I don't know if I am or not. That's.
Well, I don't know what that means. Like Linda Moulton Howe recently said, there's a secret CIA study which indicates that 30% of the world's population are hybrids. But is that something that you can see in the DNA? Is that something you can physically figure out? Or do you know how that works?
I don't know how that works, but I do know that the council of eight told us that about that we are hybrids, that we they planted our seed here, and that we have had DNA upgrades before, so that humans on this planet are hybrids.
But this seems to be the route to perhaps bring true freedom to the world is through this program of upgrade of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Wow. I believe so. I'm also a quantum healing hypnosis practitioner.
Yeah, talk about that. I just got Dolores Cannon's book this week as well.
Yeah. So I was...
Upgrade of humanity.
I knew Dolores. I had spoken in Missouri? Arkansas. She was from Arkansas.
Yeah, Arkansas.
So
yeah.
I had spoken in Arkansas.
Yeah, this is your book here. The three waves.
She has several books.
And, oh yeah,
and she many. Was always saying to me, "Well, you ought to do more things besides just being an abduction researcher." And so I thought about it over time. But what really caused me to do this is that I was asleep, and as I was waking up, I was in that hypnopompic state just before waking up in the morning, and she came to me. And she said, "You really need to study this." And so I said, "Okay." And I said to her daughter that had happened to me. And she said, "You'd be surprised how many people say that." So apparently Dolores is going around talking to us, even though she's deceased. So then I signed up for level one and did that. And in order to go to level two, you have to work with 20 or 30 different people, and record, you document all of this. Their identity is not revealed, but you document all of it. And then once you do that, you can go to level two training, which is much, much better than level one. So I did the level two training and started working with people. I think that my relationship with the Council of Eight has helped me with this and helped me with a lot more as well. But now I am able to work very comfortably as a level two practitioner with experiencers. And part of the technique that Dolores developed over a 40-year period involves contacting the higher self or the superconscious. And so learned how to do that and to ask questions for the experiencer, where we can access the Akashic record for answers, and also to carry out any healing that the experiencer wants. And so the more I do this, the more in touch I am with these higher entities. So when I do the healing now, I actually extend my hand. That's not part of the training, but when I extend my hand, then I feel this, like I'm a conduit, that I'm channeling energy. And it comes down and through my arm and out through my hand. And the person that I'm working with feels heat. They don't feel the tingling, but they feel heat. And healing is taking place. So that's pretty amazing to me. I'm really so pleased that I've become a conduit for healing. So through all of this process over the years, from the fear and loathing to coming, you know, just growing and moving forward to these different things has really been very good. And I will continue in that direction.
Yeah. I mentioned this Council of Eight, like what's its relationship with the Federation of Planets? Is this the same thing or a different thing?
They're part of the Federation.
Wow. So the Federation is like the big thing, and your Council of Eight is related to planet Earth or part of planet Earth?
Yeah, in this quadrant of the galaxy. So, yes. So, you know, they're part of the Federation. They're assigned to this quadrant of our galaxy.
Yeah, it makes sense. That's logical. So I'm just so fascinated with your experience. Like, do you interact on, or just sit and listen to the group of eight? Or are you interacting with them and talking? And it's all telepathic, I assume, right?
Yes, I am able to talk with Zark. That's the one who has wanted to talk with me because of my scientific mind. I was much more in my left brain to begin with this. And then I discovered that I had to really develop the right brain in order to do this work that I'm doing. So I've been focused on that. In the Briggs-Meyer testing, I was one of those few people who was equally left brain and right brain. Most of us are more of one than the other. But so I've been developing that right brain because that's the part of the brain that's able to access these higher dimensions.
Yeah. And I want to ask you about Susie Hansen's thesis that, you know, hundreds of years from now, the final end goal is we're going to have hybrids of gray aliens with Homo sapiens sapiens. So the new human won't be Homo sapiens sapiens anymore, be quantitatively much upgraded with, you know, telepathic consciousness, quantum dimensional consciousness, more of a spiritual orientation. Is that what you believe the future is? What's your take on where we're going as humanity?
I hate to predict the future, but I can tell you that the ETs say that the universal language is telepathy. They say that they will not connect with us openly until we can communicate with animals. So I've been working on that, and connecting quite well with them.
Well, I just got a kitten on Sunday, so I'm trying to. Yeah. So do you think it's true humanity is going to be upgraded into hybrids, like Homo sapiens sapiens, like our time is done in a sense? We're not spiritual enough, so we really need to be upgraded. It's time to go.
Well, Dolores Cannon said that there are going to be two Earths. There is going to be the lower vibrating Earth and then the higher vibrating kind of Earth. And maybe that's going to happen. I don't know. I wonder about the interdimensional aspect of this, because these entities that in the Council of Eight live in a different dimension. They're fifth dimensional. So the goal is for humans to move toward that fifth dimension. And probably those who do will be able to incarnate as fifth dimensional entities later on.
But will these be like the new human? Like, will this be like the flesh and blood? I guess the new human will look roughly human, but more gray qualities. Like, I assume the grays are not capable of living on this planet. So they want us to be, they can live here in a sense through humanity by developing a hybrid.
Well, the grays have difficulties. They've lost their, many of them have lost their ability to have the emotions that we have, and they're trying to get those back. Some of them have lost the ability to reproduce. I once in a hypnosis session went to a planet where there are grays who were at war with reptilians. They don't like each other. And in that hypnosis session, the grays were still living underground. And it was a really sad situation for them. I felt really bad. It had been a very long period of time, I was able to learn, since this nuclear war had happened, where the surface of their planet was destroyed. And they were only now being able to go outside a little bit. So I felt really sorry for that group.
Yeah, this is something I'm still learning about. This is my big interest, the grays. Like, I've talked to other gray experiencers like Jeff, who say, well, they don't really need Earth. Like, they're all over the galaxy. They're trying to help us, and they're quite developed, and they're okay with their genes. And also, like Susie Hansen describes, emotionally, like, they're, because they're telepathic, they don't need facial features. So to us, they look deadpan, but they do express love, even a bit of humor, that they do have positive emotions. You know, that's what she was saying.
You know, they project their emotions. Yeah. They, what caused me to overcome my fear of them is that they were projecting the most incredible feeling of love toward me that I've ever experienced.
That's what people say.
That on Earth. And the message, we are family.
So what do you say to critics who say, oh, it's all deception, they're all here to destroy us and take us over, they're just brainwashing you by thinking it's all love? What do you say to those people?
I'm not going to lower my vibration by interacting with those individuals.
Good.
It's fruitless. They have their own opinion.
Yeah.
I know that some of these, especially the grays, the droids that are working with the reptilians, don't have a good agenda. They're under the control of the reptilians.
Yeah.
And that the Council of Eight has told us that.
So you think there's lots of bad press and misinformation about the grays, because there can be the artificial small grays, which aren't really the grays, and reptilians could be manufacturing them for, like, a false flag to give the grays a bad reputation. You think that's the case?
Absolutely.
Oh, I agree. Thank you.
Yeah.
I guess we should open up to others. I've had my 45 minutes with you. You got 45 minutes left, and there's 10 of us here. I also want to introduce you to Christina. She's in the States, and she's had a relationship with a mantid. She's got quite an intense relationship with the mantid, so I want her to give you the first question or comment.
Hello.
So, folks, that's Kathleen Martin. And our next talk here is called Kathleen Martin's Research and View on the Alien Agendas, where she talked with Christine about her real life experiences now, you know, in the States with a mantid.
Welcome to the...
Sorry, just queuing that one up now. Yeah, and the mantid, they're in the top of the hierarchy of aliens that we know of. They're above the tall grays. They're like the project manager. So very important being.
I was the Mutual UFO Network's director of experience or research from 2011 until just a couple of months ago when I left due to time constraints.
They're like really the project manager.
Doing
so
other things.
Very important being.
And I didn't have time for that. So I'm just, a consultant to that group now.
Yeah.
But over that period of time, I have spoken with between my group and I, we started out with only three of us, but over the 10 years, we expanded to 50 of us.
Very good.
So yeah. Generally, we got about 100 reports every month. And we were non-judgmental listeners.
Very good.
We were there to assist people, to help them, to make referrals to vetted hypnotherapists.
At 100
psychotherapists who worked with experiencers using hypnosis, that sort of thing.
Very good. I guess we should open up to others. I've had my 45 minutes with you. You have 45 minutes left, and there's 10 of us here. I also want to introduce you to Christina. She's in the States, and she's had a relationship with a mantid. She's got quite an intense relationship with the mantid, so I want her to give you the first question or comment. Christina, you're there.
Hello. Hi, Kathy. Thank you for being today. I have had a relationship with the mantis for a long time.
Okay, folks, we're coming up on a break. Please remember, Revolution Radio is totally listener supported. So please send in your shekels to keep us on the air. This is a great radio station covering so many broad topics. You can go online to revolution.radio and use your credit card if you like. You can find me at my website, brianrue.ca. That's R-U-H-E. For my picture channel, Brian Rue. Okay, folks, here comes the music. Time for a break. We'll be back in a few minutes.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine.
There was blood on the wire.
Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West. Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey guys, Scorpio here. Join me every Saturday at 2 p.m. here on Studio A for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show, where we discuss the hidden agendas that impact our lives and uncover the secret societies and the shadowy elite who construct the reality that we are supposed to believe. So be there Saturdays, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, here on Studio A on Revolution Radio, and learn what's really going down.
Lost a little honey on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back to Revolution Radio. This is hour two of two, the Brian Rue Show. I'm Brian Rue in Vancouver, Canada. I've been on this show for almost 3 years now. The fame has changed my life. I mean, there's always women camped out my front lawn, but, you know, I manage. It's difficult in my relationship, but I carry on. So I'm just going to announce again, I finally got a phone number so you can phone in. I used to do this when I was young and good looking in the early days of Revolution Radio back in 2018 when I joined in 2019. Then Skype didn't renew it, but I just figured it out today. So I gave it my phone number, but it looks like it's not working now. I just got it a few hours ago, but the phone number is 603-635-4946. You can test right now and give me a call, but it's not working. It should be up by my next Tuesday show. So I'll carry on. In the first hour, I've been playing a talk by Kathleen Marden. She's the wife of, the niece of Betty Hill. And Benny and Barney Hill are the first famous abduction case from 1961. And she was 14 years old at the time, so she's been studying this. She's been since become a world-famous ufologist. So I just interviewed her on Saturday. This is a fresh interview I just recorded. So I'm going to continue where we left off there. And her talk here is called Kathleen Marden, How to Deal with a Manted Alien. And here she's talking with Kathleen in the United States. Christine, who's had this manted with her for many years, and she's quite active right now. She's quite emotional, so this is quite a good interview, and it's really an honor to have her on. So I'll carry on now with Kathleen Marden. Here we go, folks.
And I think he's been quite active the past couple of days. I even had an experience, I believe, last night.
So this is quite a good interview.
You said something here just in the last couple of minutes talking, and I have all kinds of questions about the Mantis. I've been struggling to get over my fear because I want a positive relationship. Of course, I want to know anything that you could tell me about. A year and a half ago, the Mantis, what I took from that hypnosis was that the Mantis was harvesting my emotions. And the Grays were there. They were present, one taller, two short. And I'm wondering if the Grays are low on their emotions, I guess, and the Mantis was harvesting mine. Is the purpose of this to share my emotions with the Grays? Because
do you still have the emotions that you had before?
No.
You don't have those emotions?
No, sadly, I don't.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of that before. I do know that they tend not to understand us very well from people that I've worked with, where in one case, individual felt like he was on craft and this mantis was eating his face off. And I said, it didn't eat your face off. You still have a face. And he said, oh, it's telling me that we are all containers for souls, that it is only a container for a soul. So, you know, that was kind of an unusual experience. I haven't heard of the Mantid group harvesting people's emotions. I'm concerned about that. I do know, I've read many reports that the Grays are capable of showing emotions, some of them now, whereas, you know, 20, 30 years ago, they weren't. And I know that there are Grays who are growing old, that they're showing, they develop wrinkles, they look older, which we used to think that it was impossible, but that simply didn't happen. So there are these changes that are taking place, but that's not good if they harvested your emotions. You know, I say, send telepathic messages that you want your emotions back. Give them back. And when you encounter these entities, project love. If these are negative entities, they don't want what you're selling. They want fear. They want loathing. It's a banquet for them. They feast off that. But if you project love toward them, then it will probably be different.
You know, I really appreciate that, because I've heard such good things about Mantis, and with the knowledge that I came back with from that regression, it was not positive. So that's why I really struggled with this. And the more that I've learned, I have come to believe, bear with me here, I've come to believe that my thoughts and emotions are controlled, greatly influenced, to stir the pot, to create the chaos, to create negativity, to draw from that. Because listen, I'm going to tell you, I used to be a person that walked in the room smiling. I always had a smile on my face.
Mm-hmm.
Always. I'm going to do this, actually, because I do communicate with the Mantis like that. I know when he's coming. I don't know. I just, that's very helpful. That's very helpful. But, you know, in this topic, in this subject, it's the more you learn, the more questions you have.
Right. That's really true. Absolutely. So have you... Did you have full emotions before that hypnosis session?
So that hypnosis session was in February of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed my emotions began to change in, I'd say, 2016 and 2017.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other advice for you? Do you meditate at all?
Yes.
Okay. Do you protect yourself before you meditate?
I ask the archangels to come in, and okay. then I surround myself with white light and stone.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, it's good to, like, when I do it, I just ask for light, sacred light from above to spiral down through the crown chakra, and I go through the different chakras in my body. If I want to ground myself, I spiral down into the earth, and then I pull up sacred energy to the heart chakra, which is the one halfway between these three and the lower three. So it's really important to do that, to try to elevate your vibrational frequency through love in any way to do that, to try to connect with the higher entities. And if there is some kind of attachment that you have, you can have that removed. Uh-huh. I know somebody who can do that, who is pretty good.
Okay.
And I could give you that person's information.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I guess we could open up to questions and comments. Anyone else? There's 10 of us here. Appreciate everyone being so patient. Anyone else like to comment, questions? This is your chance with Kathleen Martin, famous guest.
Yes, Kasia.
Kathleen, hi, my name is Kasia. I am so delighted to meet you. Thank you. You give such a lightness and gravitas to the subject at the same time. Something we really needed. So I really appreciate all the times I've seen you speak about what has happened. And then slowly over time, I've come to learn what you've shared, that you have also been an experiencer. And it's very interesting how you came out with that. It seemed like a very natural, very matter of fact. When I first started talking about this kind of thing, I felt a little bit of shame and embarrassment, I guess. But the more people like you come out that are making it very matter of fact, the more those people should be shamed that shame you or shame me or shame us for having contact with other entities, other galaxies, other beings. To the woman who spoke before, Carolyn, I believe. Christina, I had the opposite experience. I used to be the person who walked into the room with a black cloud over my head and would just feel so weighted down. I've been for many years now, 20 years, doing a lot of spiritual work, protective cleansing, aura healing, chakra work, a lot of prayers, a lot of gratitude messages, and a lot of talking to what I used to call spirits. I used to do seances in New York City and studied this for many years. And the more I came out of the closet with it, those people that were shaming me before, especially family members, they're the biggest ones. Those family members started coming to me on the QT saying, "Can I talk to you? I think I had a spiritual experience too. I think I saw a ghost, Jesus, spirit, an ET. And I appreciated the fact that the more I stepped into my spiritual awakening, awareness, people felt more comfortable and just took it for granted. I wasn't happy when I started thinking that I was experiencing other entities. I always thought I was talking to dead people and spirits. Mm-hmm. And then I met Petaluma Mufu. Fun, and those people were seeing, they had made illustrations up of the images and things and beings that they saw. What surprised and disappointed me was that what they said were ETs and beings from another realm, another galaxy, were the same things I was actually seeing and touching me and that I was touching. Mm-hmm. And when I felt them touching me and I touched them, I felt a sense of overriding cellular love on every atom, every molecule. When my dad experienced it, he said that what he heard was the sound of music that was in every atom of his being. And he couldn't find it on this plane, but when he was out in spirit world, he found that. I did not experience that. That love feeling was so encompassing and so awe-inspiring. So when people started telling me that these were not, those aren't dead people, they said, those are people from other planets. Those are grays. And I thought, oh, geez, now I've got to open my own, I have to open my mind to a new paradigm, which I'm doing. But one thing that did happen was that when one of the entities came into the room, and normally I was filled with a sense of love and almost a soporific effect where I would just go to sleep, which was kind of out of character. When you're seeing an entity in your bedroom, the normal response would be to say, someone's in my bedroom, what's going on? And instead of falling asleep. And in one instance, a being came in with such a huge shape, a feminine energy, and I got frightened by it, and it immediately left very slowly over the course of maybe 2 seconds. And as soon as she left, I tried to call her back and to say, I'm not really scared. My heart was still beating, but I said, you know, I'm sorry. I must have scared you away with my fear that you didn't feel welcome. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen her again, but that fear was unusual for me. Normally I'm filled with a sense of love. And I just wanted to say, I'm still not certain of what I'm seeing. The fact that other people are seeing it with me is very comforting, because we have a shared experience of seeing a spirit or seeing an entity. We're seeing a lot of flashing lights.
Maybe you're seeing both.
Maybe, who knows? What I am intrigued by is what you were talking about was the Council of Eight. Mm-hmm. Are these leaders or people who are entities or beings or not, I'm not sure what to call them, knowledge bases that are trying to help us, our planet or all planets?
They're trying to help us, and you know they're assigned to this quadrant of the galaxy. So whatever other planets that populated, they look over as well.
Thank you very much.
I also want to ask Ian if he's here. Ian joined us a bit late. If you'd like to chime in, he works with Linda Moulton Howe on Earth Files. He left me a chat, but. Here he is.
Yeah. Hi. Hello, yeah. Sorry, I'm a little bit late coming here, but Kathleen, it's great to see you on here, and it's great to hear you. You always bring a very measured and calm approach to the subject, but also grounded in the scientific basis, and also because of the heritage, obviously, of your famous case that let's say started the ball rolling with it all as well. So it's an honor to be able to speak to you here.
Thank you.
It's good that you also cover, as Brian covered in his introduction to you, that you cover all the races, the benevolent, the hostile, and as Brian said, the somewhat in between as well, because it is we are dealing with a huge variety of different races here. And I liked it when you answered the question about the agendas. You said there are many agendas here. And that is, again, something else that's very important to take on board, is the actual different agendas that are going on. But the main thing is the awareness of the alien presence. And thank you so much for all your work that you've done to bring that forward to the consciousness of so many people. And that you're reaching such a wide global audience, and I just want to say thank you for that. I do want to clear up one thing. I don't know if you covered this, or if you know you may be fed up with hearing about this one, but it's let's say a rumor that's been going around in some in the UFO communities about that links with Stan Romanek and Betty Hill. Are you aware about the that apparently Stan, the rumor is that Stan Romanek found that he actually did have Betty's nightdress or something from another abduction. Is there any truth in any of those rumors or anything?
It was just a really strange coincidence.
Yeah.
Betty's t-shirt was not like the one that Stan lost. I looked and looked for the longest time for that t-shirt to find out if in fact she had Stan's t-shirt and he had her nightgown, because she did have one of those Disney nightgowns with that was plaid, just like the one he ended up wearing. But her t-shirt was a different color. It had the same slogan on the front. I've been abducted by aliens and all I got was this lousy t-shirt. But hers was turquoise blue, and it was given to her by Carl Flock. I finally found out. I investigated that for the longest time and just couldn't find an answer. And boy, I was happy after several years when I did find the evidence.
Oh, thank you. Well, at least that that puts that to bed, as it
were. Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Going forward with this, what do you feel now is the role for people like us who are interviewing these people who are having these experiences and everything else? Because it's, in some ways, it becomes overwhelming. We've got so many people now coming forward, it's become so mainstream, but it's validating and corroborating everyone's experiences. But we are getting so many people now coming forwards, and it is, you know, even without any, let's say, official disclosure as such, we are still getting the a lot of people now becoming, let's say, accepting to the alien presence.
Yes, and now the Council of Eight, I don't know if you were here to hear that, but they said that they did attempt to communicate with the heads of state. And I also worked on a study, you'll read about that in Ray Hernandez's The Freeze book that I have a chapter in. There was information I found way back, originating in 1954, that involved Navy Admiral, the UFO person from the Canadian government, scientist Wilbert Smith, and members of the intelligence community and the military in a secret study that they did with ETs who were interdimensional. So what was I going to say? what we should all do? Well, the council said that they had gone to the heads of state. There were leaders of business who knew about them, and that no one had agreed to communicate with them, to accept guidance from them, to grow spiritually from them, and that therefore they went to the people. And so maybe that's why so many of us have had contact. But they say that it's starting out on the bottom. And when we all reach a certain level of knowledge, then we'll all be aware. There will be a tipping point, and everyone will be aware of their presence. And that these benevolent groups are attempting to raise our level of consciousness and spirituality.
Yeah. Oh, and another thing I wanted to ask you is, one of the things that I've discovered in my research, and I've been researching quite a lot with people, is the encounters that they have outside of the normal alien abduction scenario of seeing a light and orb being taken at night. This is when people meet up with strangers or people who are, let's say, not quite human, not quite normal in their day-to-day life, or maybe they're aware that somebody on the bus or in the street is not quite normal, but let's say tuned into them and able to communicate with them telepathically, etc. So I see that there's a lot of this going on as well in the background, and I think that this is another significant part of it that shows the scope of the contact situation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and some of this contact is really interdimensional, where the experiencer is able to see a higher dimensional entity, that the others can't see. I have a friend who told me about an individual who was a scientist who was attempting to develop a theory, and that part of that was just missing, and that he was in an airport and a man came up and sat down with him at the table and said, I understand that you're looking for this. Well, this is what you should do. And then he got up and left, and this scientist who was sitting there is looking around, and he said, did you see that person, to a person at another table? And the person said, no, I was just wondering why you were talking to yourself.
Right. Oh. So he hadn't even seen it well.
Yeah.
Say, Christina just has her hands up. I want to ask her if she wants to chime in.
It's funny because I actually had contact with that Council of Eight back in June. Mm-hmm. And I knew that it wasn't just a dream. It was actually down in Florida, but the Blue Avian contacted me back in February and then again in March.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I think he more stayed with me in my room, and he showed me what I think is like the cosmic web on my one bedroom wall. And he told me, I think, about the Law of One. But I had contact with the Council of Eight, and I honestly don't know if there were six of them or eight of them, but they were of different species. The main one is the only one that I was like really allowed to remember. And I think that was the mantis. Mm-hmm. And then I could ask any question that I wanted. They only let me remember like two things, but I had to wipe my own memory. It was an agreement. It was like a trust building type of thing. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I just wanted to share that with you because it's still, you know, very fresh. It was just in June, and it's so exciting that somebody else.
What part of Florida were you in?
I was out of Pensacola.
Oh, okay. So north of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I was on vacation. Yeah. Yeah. It was wonderful, actually. I kind of had a feeling that they were coming. I didn't expect anything like that, though. So it was good. It was positive. And it was, you know, just very trust building. Anyway, I just wanted to share that.
Yeah. They're all very nice. And if you ask Shiva for healing, she's the ninth dimensional and a healer.
Okay, Shiva?
Shiva, S-H, not like the Indian S-H-I-V-A, it's female and S-H-E-E-V-A.
Okay, and Shiva is a higher dimensional?
Ninth dimensional.
Okay.
Healer.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, thank you.
Okay. Anyone else, open it up. We got 10 of us here, we got Colin, Dusty, Bruce, Bear.
Sure. I'll start, I guess. First off, Kathleen, thank you very much for all the work you've done. It has been immensely important to the field. I cannot stress that enough. A lot of what I'm about to talk about has already been touched on by many of our other speakers, everyone who's spoken so far. But I've had experiences, visitations. I don't particularly like certain terminology that's used a lot because it insinuates certain things. Initially, I considered myself an abductee, and now I kind of only say that I have visitations because I've realized as I've grown spiritually, for lack of a better term, that I understand more and more about my relationship with the experience. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, when I realized that it was actually happening and that I was not going crazy, then the entire nature of the experience changed. It almost tripled in the dimension of it. The interactions changed, everything changed. Mm-hmm. And while that was happening, I was, like many other experiencers, combing through books and the internet to find a context for where my experiences in general. And as I did that, I started realizing that a lot of my experiences did not fit this almost dogma that has accrued inside of the community. Certain narratives, especially regarding a type of black and white thinking. Okay.
Me too.
Yeah. And in the beginning, I didn't know what to make of any of it. And I took a lot of it seriously, and it added a lot of dimensions of fear to my own experience from my end. And I feel like it complicated my own growth, and it almost constrained it to a certain degree. And I am curious what your thoughts were on that, how intentional that is, and ways that people could find their way around that if they're having trouble kind of with not knowing with where to start with information as far as the context of their own experiences. Thank you.
Well, it's really important that you have followed a spiritual path, because that's just far more positive part of that is love, and that's extremely important. I'm sort of like you, because in the beginning, I was reading some of the pioneer researchers who took a very negative view of everything that was going on, and parts that I couldn't remember were really frightening to me, because it was like, okay, you are a lab rat, you are being taken to a table, they are doing these terrible things to you, that sort of thing. And I became terrified, where I wasn't when I was 17. It was like all of a sudden I'm developing this feeling of terror because of what I'm learning. And then as time went on and years passed, and I have to thank people like Paul Hamden in Australia, who speaks with a council as well, speaks with one individual from that council that I was able to communicate with back in 2012, I gained a different understanding. And then with Kevin Briggs' Council of Eight, even more insight. And so it's taken more of a spiritual path in the past, say, 5 years for me too. In fact, both Denise Stoner and I haven't had contact with the other types of entities we were having contact with for at least 5 years. So, but the council said that they would protect us, that we're sort of under their umbrella and they're sheltering us. In fact, I had a run-in with a highly negative interdimensional and tried to get rid of it, and I couldn't. It was because I was so curious about this really negative side. I wanted to know, was this really ETs, these draconian reptilians who do horrible things, or was this more in a spiritual, negative spiritual realm? And I guess it doesn't really matter anymore what realm it's in. It's there, and it did tried to attach to me, because I got too close to a person who had this going on in their life, and I wanted to know what it was. And so I had to ask Ra, who is the male side of Shiva and ninth dimensional from the council, to remove that. And it was removed immediately. So it's just important to stay away from those lower vibrating entities.
This is fascinating, just learning about this Council of Eight. I didn't know about it. This is very good. Great meeting.
Holy smokes. I've done a lot of talking about it, I guess.
I like it. And thanks, Dusty, for your experience. Welcome to the meetup group. Yeah. Anyone else?
Well, I thought that was synchronicity in itself, that Christina has identified with the Council of Eight, just when we've heard it from Mayor Kathleen Marden. That's amazing.
Ian, thank you for introducing Christina to the group in a previous. Yeah. Yeah, synchronistic.
And I have a friend in Florida who didn't know Kevin Briggs at all, but who in her journal had written about two people from the Council of Eight who had come to her, the same names that they have given Kevin, Ort and Dee, who are the Arcturians. So, I mean, and this was a few years ago that she had written that in her diary, that she had met them. So I guess they're getting around.
So yeah, this sorry, go ahead, Christina.
I'm sorry. I was just trying to get a little bit of clarification. Are there Arcturians on the Council of Eight as well?
There are two. They say they're Arcturians, but they're not from Arcturus. That's what they say. They look human, bigger than humans. They're a little bit different than us, but essentially the same. They're telepathic. They're highly advanced. They're fifth dimensionals, not as advanced as Ra and Shiva, who have had many incarnations as earthlings and as extraterrestrials, and no longer reincarnate into a physical form.
Huh, that's really interesting. My daughter, she's 17, and she's beginning to remember contact that she has. Mm-hmm. And she met a couple of Arcturians out in the front yard one night through her dream, and they just wanted to introduce themselves. Mm-hmm. And said that they wanted her to get used to seeing them, that they'll be around more.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
That's nice. You know, it's nice to get rid of that fear factor.
Yeah.
And don't give power to the negative ones. That's the important thing.
Kathleen, I have a question. This is Kaja again from Portland, Oregon. You know, a lot of us are connecting with spirits or and other entities. What do you get is the sense of how we can be the most help on this planet? There's a lot of negativity and divisiveness, but what do you get from your wisdoms that you've heard?
I have asked that question. What can we as individuals do to help on this planet? And the explanation I was given had to do with our collective consciousness, which is pretty negative right now. So it's important for us to raise our consciousness through meditation, through positive activities, in order to put that positive kind of energy into the collective consciousness, because as long as it's negative, we're going to have things like this negativity, in wars, plagues, you know, and that sort of thing. And also, I was told to, this sounds really weird, but to go outside and project love toward the vegetation, toward the animals.
Please like and subscribe, and there's more to come.
Okay, folks. So now I can play the rest of our talk. As far as we have time for now, I'll just go to that now. It's it's all recorded on last Saturday. It's called Kathleen Martin Says Evidence of 5,000 plus experiences of UFOs involve consciousness. And this is not released to the public yet. It will be tonight, but you will hear it first, the Revolution Radio audience. And please remember, Revolution Radio is totally listener supported. So send in your donations to this worthy cause and radio station. Okay, folks, I'll continue with this Kathleen Martin marathon. And she's the niece of Betty and Barney Hill, who were abducted in 1961. Okay, here we go. It's just
in the three scientific studies on more than 5,000 experiencers that It involves consciousness. You cannot understand this entire topic unless you have an understanding of consciousness. That it's not nuts and bolts. You know, the ETs understand the council this, and the ones that have visited me that I communicated with on craft are just really concerned about our stewardship of our planet or lack thereof, and what the destruction that we have caused, and how important it is to change that.
But Kathleen, I want to ask, isn't there a solution to that? The agenda that they're going to upgrade us, this huge industrial scale, very covert program to upgrade us genetically, telepathically. Oh, you know, yeah, we need more loving kindness, but there's 7.9 billion people that aren't listening to us, you know, and they don't seem to be getting much better after the century. So it seems like they're taking care of the job on an industrial scale. Like, we can do what we can, but they're doing it on a very big scale. That's my impression. Yeah.
We all have to do what we can. And yes, those power mongers who operate on increasing their wealth and controlling others are the ones who are doing the harm. And
yeah,
and we just have to try to spread this message.
Yeah, I guess we'll eventually win.
That we achieve this goal.
Yeah.
But that's what we have to do if we're going to do anything to change this.
Yeah. Christina's got her hand up.
I have a question, and I know that it may seem silly, but I'm going to ask it anyway. The Mantis, do you have any idea, like, what they drive, like, what their UFO looks like?
They're mostly seen in triangular craft.
Okay.
But they have been, like the craft that I talked about in North Carolina when the three people were taken, that was not triangular. That was more of the regular round craft. But there were mantis and also human types on that.
Okay, thank you. I had seen a UFO actually in my backyard.
Mm-hmm. What shape was it?
It was a silver disc, uh-huh, about the size of, I'd say, of a small sedan.
Mm-hmm.
And quiet. And it was like this time of night, actually in the summertime. And they kind of organized an abduction, I felt like. They had me invite the girl from the gas station on the corner. I didn't even know her. I felt so compelled to invite her over to our house and to have a fire with the kids. And I walked out of the back door. They were right above. I mean, they were at the treetops.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even know. And I pointed, and then they took off. But, you know, they must have come back because we have some missing time. Mm-hmm. But I always wondered about that because when I went underneath I didn't get to see exactly what the outside of the UFO looked like when the mantis took me when I was like 13. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was wondering. So that's helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. One thing that really impressed me, you said they tried to make contact to like business and governments, and basically the people said no. So then they decided to go to the people. That really makes an impression. That kind of makes sense. We had one talk with Jeff, an experiencer here, who said they tried to contact like the Eisenhower government, the media in 1954. And his impression from the Grays, it was very confusing. They just didn't know what to do. That, well, maybe we should have disclosure. We don't know what to do, so we just don't do it. And they're really, really confused. And then they decided not to do it. So I could see this. And so Jeff said, well, they're just going to have to go do it. If they can't have it one way, they'll have to do it another way to improve the earth, you know. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense. Well, they went to the people.
Admiral Herbert Knowles knew my aunt and uncle, and my Aunt Betty told me about him and how they'd met him, how they'd gone to his house. And I knew that he was communicating with a woman named Frances Swan. And so I wanted more information about that. He was also involved with Wilbert Smith from the Canadian government. And so I wrote a little bit about it in my book, Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. And then I was talking about it on the shows I was on. And I was at a conference in New Hampshire, and Admiral Knowles' granddaughter came to me with a packet of information. It contained letters between Wilbert Smith and him. And all of this information that was really like a gold mine, because they did notify Dwight Eisenhower. He knew about it. The Canadian embassy knew about this, the CIA, the FBI, the Office of Naval Research, Office of Naval Intelligence. Was a naval officer who learned to communicate telepathically, like Francis Swan was. And I have the information that those ETs were giving to these men. And I think that it wasn't publicized, but I think that Wilbert Smith was able to communicate some as well. And they were trying to meet with Eisenhower. They were trying to meet with people from the government. Jacques Vallée and Alan Hynek had written about this too, that it was in Alan Hynek's files. And so the message was, we're here in very large numbers in gigantic ships with mother ships inside, and there are many of us. We're here to help you. We will share technology with you, but we will not favor one nation over any other. If we give anything, it is going to be given for the benefit of humanity to everyone. Well, that's not what the power mongers wanted. And so they didn't accept that. But there is some evidence that Commander Larson, who learned that technique of communication, met with a group of in the CIA office in Washington, was able to call in a craft, and it was seen. And also that there was a secret meeting. And I'm wondering if that involved Dwight Eisenhower. I don't have that information, but I know there's a lot of talk about his secret meeting.
Kathleen, Do you think a lot of what's gone down through the years, recent years even, is the result of our protection of not wanting to let the cat out of the bag? Take, for instance, the CIA, the FBI, all of those agencies seem to me over the years to become more and more subversive. And I would think because of what they're trying to protect. And as a result, we know less and less about their activity because of this whole cover-up. And that in itself shows how difficult man in general is having, how difficult it is for us to accept what we're going to have to eventually. You know, all this is just such a cat in the bag thing. We just can't get at it because people just can't wrap their heads around it. The powers of be and all the rest of us. And eventually, like with people like you, it's going to come out. But there seems to be such opposition, and it's just difficult to understand. Anyways, that's enough for me. Just throwing something to you. Thank you.
I agree that it's difficult. And, you know, Dwight Eisenhower warned against a military industrial state, and it developed anyway. And we have so many intelligence agencies now. And the highest rate of incarcerated individuals of any country on earth in the United States. It's really a problem.
Yeah, it's a huge black budget apparatus, right? It affects the very nature of democracy itself if there's so much secrecy that they have to hold back. I guess one thing that changed my thinking about from Susie Hansen's teachings is that the Greys don't want full disclosure right away. They themselves think that humanity can't handle it all at once. So they themselves want gradual disclosure. So are the governments working at the guidance of these wholesome Greys, or are they working against it? Are they working for the reptilians? I used to think that the governments were all working for the reptilians and the Greys were sort of patiently working in the background. But for disclosure, I really don't know the nature of disclosure. Is it necessary to go slowly, this slow? What do you think?
The Council of Eight said that it's necessary, that there are three steps, and that before there will be overt contact, there has to be a raising of consciousness. That's the primary thing, that humans have to understand what consciousness is all about, and vibrational frequencies, for one thing, telepathic communication. There's a lot that humans need to learn before they can communicate with us. They're so different than us in a sense. They don't communicate the way we do.
Yeah, you also point out that the Mandas don't seem to understand people. Well, that's revealing to me, because I think, like Susie said, the Greys are chosen because they're good at working with people. Like the Greys seem to understand people, but maybe the Mantis don't. So the Greys are like an intermediary working out the plans for the Mantis. Like the Greys have said, oh, we know everything about you. But it seems that that shows a difference between the Mantis and the Greys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really don't know. I can tell you that one of those women who was one of the three who were taken to craft loves those Mantis beings and feels like she was once a Mantis being, and that she has come here into a human body in order to assist in our development. There's so much of this, these entities saying we're here to assist in your development. Yeah.
I think so. I should actually comment on the philosophy of our positive alien agenda meetup is that we're part of raising awareness that the Greys and the Mantis have a wholesome agenda for humanity. So we should support this rather than being apprehensive about it. We're just a small little voice. It's not like we're the government. So I think it's okay for us to say, you know, this agenda is in place. It's good. And you know, we should support it and be a part of it and also emphasize conscious growth, spiritual growth. So I should get your feedback on the philosophy of our meetup group.
Yeah, well, I think that's pretty apparent, is that, you know, I believe that we do need to take action to raise our spirituality. That's what I do. I do several radio shows and podcasts every week, and I talk about that, trying to get the word out. I'm working on a book where I have transcribed the information from the Council of Eight that we received over a 2-year period. And so when that's published, that will be another way, another avenue of sharing that information with the public. But, you know, I feel like I'm on a mission to try to save this planet.
Yeah, I feel that way too. I think the single biggest issue in the world is UFOs and aliens, and that this agenda is underway. They're trying to transfer humanity. This is what's going on. So that's why I feel that, like, the philosophy of the group is just to raise awareness that this is going on, like probably since the 1800s, like some people say, because obviously the vast majority of people have no idea about this. Like maybe half the population think, oh yeah, UFOs exist, there's aliens. Maybe they're just studying us. They don't understand the whole purpose behind this, you know, the why of this. That's why I think that's our role, to raise awareness about the actual agenda. You know, not just spiritual growth, because lots of people do spiritual growth, right? Mm-hmm.
Major General John Samford held a press conference in late July 1952 after UFOs were over Washington. And he said something at that press conference that has really stayed with me. And I think it's really important. He said, these things have been seen in the sky dating back to biblical times. He said that they have come back over the centuries. And then he went on to say that there's nothing in the work that we can explain this as but phenomena. So that's where the word phenomena came from in terms of UFO sightings and sightings of non-humans. But I thought that was really important because he knew that these things have been here since biblical times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that famous press conference from 1952. Okay, Kasia.
I wanted to ask about your thoughts about the global event tonight, local time, 9 to midnight. Whatever your local time is, it's 9 to midnight. I got a notice from the group that supports Stephen Greer, and they said, what we're hoping to do is have a global CE5 across the globe, whoever wants to join in, from 9 to midnight. And have you heard anything about that? And I know he's a controversial subject. So I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. Well, I'm part of Costa Macrees. Macrees, something like that. And he has a CE5. It's not like Stephen Greer's, but people from all over the world go out at certain times. And I'm not sure if it's going to take place tonight too or not, because I didn't have time to read what he sent the last time. I've been really busy working on this book and other things too. But yeah.
Can you repeat that name? Costa Macrees?
Yeah, it's Costa. And I think it's Macrees. And other things too.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Okay, folks.
That name, Costa Macrees.
Running out of time.
Yeah, it's K-O-S-T-A.
Thanks for listening to Revolution Radio. We're totally listener supported.
And I think it's.
And you can find me on BitChute at Brian Rue, officer of Bravion Channel.
Yes.
And on Odyssey Channel.
And other things too.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, folks.
That name, Costa Macrees.
Running out of time. Thanks for listening to Revolution Radio. We're totally listener supported.
And I think it's.
And you can find me on BitChute at Brian Rue, officer of Bravion Channel.
And other things too. But,
okay, folks.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio. She travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. And there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came and unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
My name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically